that's more important. I'm Joe Davis. I'm the SEJ Watchdog Editor, and this is Robert McClure, and he's the SEJ Board Guy for FOIA. Board liaison
to our FOI task force.
And this is Tony Davis, and I met him at the Davis Family Reunion. No, I didn't. He's with the Arizona Star.
Arizona Daily Star, just for the record.
Thank you. Okay.
Still daily for now.
And he's a FOIA guy, and we got a bunch of other FOIA people here. And so what we wish for is for this session to be a conversation, and we even more wish for it to be recorded. And we have one mic, we're going to have to pass it around, just like on the Oprah show. And
you might want to reintroduce.
Okay, so I'm Joe Davis, I'm the SEJ Watchdog, this is Robert McClure, he's the SEJ Freedom of Information Board Liaison, this is Tony Davis from the Arizona Daily Star, and others will be named later. And so I'm hoping this will be a conversation. I'm hoping some of you folks will bring in FOIA problems, FOIA stories, FOIA dilemmas. If you have never filed a FOIA before, this is great, because we'll talk about how to do it. And if we had a projector, I would put links up on the screen, but I will get you links another way.
This is the resources that you were going to...
Resources, yeah.
It's too bad we don't have a projector. Can I suggest...
Go.
How about if... You have those assembled, right?
Yeah.
So give me business cards.
Email
those. Yeah,
Email them, or I'll put them online, or I'll put them on the website or something, and more. Maybe I'll even update our website, which would be a good thing. But so we want this to be a clinic, meaning you come in with your problem, namely agency won't answer your FOIA, and what are you going to do now, or whatever your problem is, and we'll talk about it. Here in the room are some smart people with some experience that haven't been introduced yet, and they know who they are. What I'd like to do is start by handing the mic over to Tony, who's going to tell us his FOIA story. But before we do that, I would like to propose a small ovation, and I'll tell you why, because Tony is taking grief from the nuclear industry in the last 24-hour news cycle or the last 23-second Twitter cycle for quoting a guy from Entergy who said on the record at this meeting that Indian Point didn't have a viable evacuation plan or something close. The nuclear industry, and then Andy Redkin retweeted it, and then the nuclear industry got all bent and accused Tony of misquoting them, and Bill had the tapes, and he checked it, and Tony got it right, and he's taking grief for telling the truth. That's all.
Got that out of the way.
Okay, now we're going to give the mic to Tony, and he has to leave early, but we're glad to have him here.
I am disappointed that there's not a lot of people here. I normally don't say things like this. I don't take this all personally since my name was listed as the speaker, but I think that FOIA is a very maligned but very necessary tool, and I wish there were more of the 600 odd people here who were more interested in it to want to learn a little bit more about it, because it's a very trying, almost toxic thing to have to deal with sometimes, but I have been doing FOIA stories off and on for more than 20 years. I don't know how many I've gotten, how many I've failed to get with a FOIA, but I know a little bit about it, and you know, it's easy. I have heard very respected people, very respected journalists and academics saying that FOIA is dysfunctional and FOIA is worthless. And I guess I have to make a mild correction to it, but I don't want to deny that it has really serious problems and the federal government is a huge obstacle to getting information. You can get good stories from FOIA. It still works, you know, and it's a lot of times the main thing you need is patience. I have waited 2 years for information from FOIA, and I'm sure there's plenty of other people who've waited longer and have had to fight harder. I was in New Mexico at the time in the 1990s, and I was looking into how much money the Department of Energy had paid all the public officials in Carlsbad, New Mexico, for their businesses, because Carlsbad had agreed to take the nuclear waste dump in their called Waste Isolation Pilot Plant. And I had to get the local congressman from Albuquerque, who was a Republican in a Republican administration, to get me the stuff. I just tried everything. I called the Department of Energy week after week, month after month, nothing. Finally, this congressman procured it for me. And that was kind of a miracle. He was a really independent guy, even though he was a partisan Republican on one level, he still understood the public's right to know. You know, the one really horror story I have about FOIA is that I was working on an article for a couple of years on a jaguar that had been euthanized by the state government with the federal government's approval in Arizona. And there was a criminal investigation that arose out of this case because it was it was a criminal investigation that had started off with being painted as an accidental capture of a jaguar that was released and recaptured and euthanized. It turned out later the capture was deliberate. And when that came out, the Fish and Wildlife Service Office of Law Enforcement started a criminal investigation that lasted close to 2 years. And after the criminal investigation was over and only a couple people pleaded guilty, a lot of people were never indicted or charged, I filed a FOIA asking for the entire report of the criminal investigation. And when I got it back, when I got the FOIA, something like 10 months later, it was 3,400 pages of transcripts with virtually all the names redacted, including most of the names of public officials below the level of a director of an agency or a regional director of a federal agency. And I was, you know, I had no experience with criminal investigations at all with FOIA, or very little. And I was kind of horrified and naive, and I thought, what the hell, these are public officials. You know, how can they censor the names of public officials in the course of their duties? And I nosed around, looked around a while, filed a detailed appeal, which the federal government, the Fish and Wildlife Service, never responded in 10 months. And finally, Robert here suggested I find a public interest attorney who would take the case. And that's what I did. This really good attorney in Phoenix named David Biden, who Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press told me was one of the best, if not the best, First Amendment lawyer in the U.S. And he's represented all the papers there. He used to run a newspaper, a huge First Amendment advocate, and he did it pro bono for us, you know, except charging for his, he was gonna take legal fees if we want, you know? But the bottom line is after a year of motions and cross motions and filings and cross filings, both the magistrate judge and the superior court judge, or a district court judge in the U.S. government, sided with the government, saying they had a right to keep these names private. There was clearly a boundary between public and private. That they agreeing with the brief of the Fish and Wildlife Service that if these people's names were released, they could be subject to harassment and embarrassment. And mostly what I wanted to find out was, I wanted to get their explanations as to why a lot of things happened and, you know, who was to blame for the thing, but I wasn't looking to indict anyone. By then it was no longer a criminal issue, it was an accountability issue. And there were a lot of quotes in there saying that the state government, the federal government legally wasn't permitted to capture this jaguar, but they'd done it anyway. And I just wanted to get, for credibility's sake, the names of these people on the record. Because that's a pretty serious charge to make, that the government had basically broken the law. But, you know, we lost. And the sad thing is that the attorney, David Bodney, told myself and my editor, our editors, that it did not make sense to appeal even to the liberal, so-called liberal Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, because if you lost, the Ninth Circuit had a very mixed track record on FOIA and freedom of the press, and if you lost, it would set a hugely bad precedent. So we didn't appeal. And I'm sitting here I've been wondering, like, how do I pursue this? I have some ideas, like, I don't want to keep them private. It's kind of some private issues of my own. But I would go back to say that in between those two instances of 22 years ago and today, I've managed to get a lot of FOIAs for seemingly routine stories, for bigger stories. It's, you just have to file, and you just have to wait and wait and wait and wait and keep calling and keep calling and keep harassing. I'm sure there's other obstacles that I don't know how to deal with, but a couple of Sundays ago, we published a front page article about the Jaguar, but it was about a copper mine in southern Arizona, which I've gotten lots of FOIAs on, because that's the only way to cover it, because nobody will tell you anything. The post-copper mine that was right in the critical habitat of only another jaguar, the only one in the U.S. And the FOIA showed that the Fish and Wildlife Service's low-level people had thought this mine would could kill it and that it would cause illegal damage to its critical habitat. And they were, of course, overturned by their supervisors, and so the mine got a clean bill of health. But the point of the matter is, I filed that FOIA in the fall of in the summer or fall of 2013, and you know, it took me months. I got it for six or eight months later, and it took a while to process it and do it. So FOIA is not something for the quick hit for me. It's never been. It's always something. Once in a great while, I could use FOIA or the threat of FOIA to scare something out of the Forest Service. You know, you'd say, look, do I have to file FOIA for this? This is ridiculous. And sometimes they'd say yes, and sometimes they'd say no. Sometimes they'll say, I'll file FOIA and make it look stupid. And they'd release something to me. But normally it isn't necessarily just for, the other thing though, it's not just for long-term projects. That's the thing, that most of my stories are not long-term projects. They're just stories. They're big news stories. They're not five-part series. So don't think you have to be doing a five-part series to file FOIAs. You can file FOIAs on anything. You can get all kinds of records, reports, letters, just on one little thing. And on that note, I'm going to pass it on to others. And I do have to go to another session, but go ahead.
But before you go...
Thank you.
Thank you. But yeah, before you go, did you, with the Jaguar FOIA, were you, did the documents, the redacted documents you get, did they shed any light on, did they help you at all?
Yeah, okay, I guess I'll tell you. I have a unredacted version that I got from an insider with very strict limitations on how I was going to use it. And what I'm trying to think now is, you know, can I figure out a way to get that out so I don't have to do it, you know? I was told, don't use it till you go through FOIA. Well, I've gone through FOIA. And I there's private stuff I need to talk about with my interactions with sources, but I'm inwardly debating and thinking about what to do with it. So, yes.
Can I ask someone in the audience? Before Tony leaves, I thought maybe Jeremy could talk a little bit. Do you come across these privacy concerns in the FOIAs that are filed with you? Sorry, Jeremy Korsnick is the senior... go ahead. Yeah, introduce yourself.
Yeah, my name is Jeremy Korsnick. I'm with the Environmental Crime Section of the Department of Justice in Washington. I do environmental criminal cases around the country. And Robert asked me to... come to chat here. As I indicated to him, I, as a federal prosecutor, get information in another way, because I work with agencies that generally are pretty happy to give me information, and I also have things like grand jury subpoenas to obtain evidence. So we had talked about FOIA only in this sort of odd irony, or my context was sort of in two ways. One is, often my office will refer FOIA requests to us, so we simply comply with the law and provide the information that is sought in the FOIA request. Of course, there are statutory limitations to our disclosures relating to compliant issues and ongoing criminal investigation and the like. That's all statutory, and I'm probably looked at
6 months with the list, and that should cost you maybe 75 cents for photocopying. And they went, oh, whoops. But then, here's the important thing. So I talked with my state press association about what they were doing, and they put that on a long list of other violations, and then they worked on changing the law. And it did change, actually, and those sorts of violations of the public's right to know what the government is doing are things that, you know, if you run into a brick wall, maybe, you know, it's part of our responsibility in the press to not only find a way around the brick wall, but think about why that brick wall is there and maybe start to take it down and work with state press associations and general things. We also had, and the excuse was, and I think this is somewhat valid, that state employees have a fear of political repercussions from disclosure. And so it's easier for them to work within the FOIA structure than it is to simply be responsive. So the feds will tell you that we just want to be responsive, please just don't burden us with FOIA. The state guys will tell you, we don't want to look like we're too responsive because we're politically hostage. Therefore, please file an FOIA. Here's the documents you might even ask for. So it, the FOIA works differently on the state and federal levels in that regard.
Can I ask you, how did the state law get changed? What was done to it?
Oh, it was in 2000. This was a sort of an old story, but in 2000, the State Press Association worked with an open government association, and there's a review board that's set up. It's non-binding, but it's practically binding because it's written in the legislation. And some of the anomalous stuff, you know, was taken out. This is the section that will apply. No other sections can be cited for denial. This section only applies. And interestingly, at that point, they wrote in the academic exception, which is what protected Michael Mann about a year ago, interestingly enough. So... But yeah, they totally rewrote the whole thing and made it crystal clear that this was supposed to be disclosure. And at that moment in Virginia history and American political history, these things were nonpartisan. Now they've become partisan again, unfortunately, you know, the past 15 years or so.
Think so?
I don't know. Do you see?
I don't know. I think we've had equal
partisanship.
Equal problems with FOI issues. I would say they've gotten worse under Obama. But
equal as far as.
But they were, you know, Bush administration was pretty obstructionist too. So.
Yeah.
Did you have something you wanted to say?
I did, yeah. Sorry, I have to talk loud.
Okay, talk loud.
I'm Lois partially, and I'm wondering in a general sense if you can address finding the right terms for FOIAs in a series, once you've submitted a series and you haven't gotten back what you want from various agencies. Sure. If you have any tips on targeting searches, and that's kind of hard to talk about in a general sense, perhaps, but...
Targeting's important. Anyone?
Yeah, I guess you're asking about how to focus a FOIA request?
You go from a shotgun to a rifle, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is it just like, is it, because I've had this problem, like, I don't know exactly what I want. I mean, I know the information that I want, but I don't know what document it's on, or...
That's better way to put it.
So, I don't know. I mean, it's probably best if you have, like, a deep throat inside the agency who can tell you.
Yeah, like Tony had the document he was asking for. That's the ideal situation from a reporter's standpoint.
Well, now,
this is a really important strategic question in many, many FOIAs. Although knowing the document you want is often the answer.
You can't just ask a question like, I want the answer to this.
Give me everything and anything that you have about water pollution.
No,
you can't ask a question. You have to request documents. So you can't say
how many spills were there last year.
You could say, I would like documents that would show how many spills there were last year.
Okay.
You're asking for documents. Record. I say documents. It's broader than that, because video recording
is... That's not really a document. I mean, that's not what I... That's interesting you say that, because I think that's more like asking a question, like, how many spills were there?
I need documentation of how many spills there were. Could you say it like that?
Any documentation over the last year that have any memorandum, reports, whatever, over the last year that document... If you want a total tally, you have to be real specific.
Right.
Total tally of water spills or individual, any water spill, you know, any documents into any waters.
A few things to remember, that FOIA is constructed to apply to government records, so it is document-oriented. It's worth keeping that in mind as you ask. Second, a broad request takes a lot of searching, and a narrow request doesn't, and searching takes time. So you will get a faster response if you narrow your request. Sometimes you really are just trolling and looking, and you want to do a dragnet, and that's understandable, but you have to understand the consequences. You can talk to agency FOIA officers and negotiate with them and narrow your request. You may revise your request in writing if you want. And they might tell you in a realistic way, well, if we do your request that way, it's going to take a long time and a lot of hours. And if we do it another way, if you only ask for this stuff, then we can do it a lot faster. This is relevant. I'm just going to say one word, fees. Hopefully we all get all our fees waived, but in reality, we might not. So if they have to search for things, they can charge you for doing that. And if you don't have a fee waiver, then it can add up to a larger prohibitive cost. So you want a fee waiver. And if you're a journalist or an academic or what you're doing is in the public interest or a lot of other things, then you can get a waiver of those costs. Sometimes. You can ask for it and they will sometimes give it to you.
Can I make a couple points about both of these things?
Yeah.
So one thing is that it used to be that almost many times when we filed the FOIA, we would get a call from the FOIA officer, especially broad FOIA. Can everybody hear me? No?
Yeah.
We would get a call from the FOIA officer saying, like, okay, you filed this broad request, and then we'd go through this process to kind of winnow it down. I don't get those calls so much anymore. They just kind of, especially, I think it has to do to some degree with having gone to eFOIA for some of the, a lot of it's electronic now, and I'm not sure what effect that's having. But if you get that call, and we still do get it, that's a negotiating opportunity, and you can often get the FOIA officer. They, at this point, will have some idea what their records are like, and they can sometimes tell you and help you get to exactly what you need. The second thing I wanted to say is we are using Seth Bornstein, I think was the first guy who I know who did this. We have a FOIA letter, which I'd be happy to send you, that asks the agency, we say basically, we're going to authorize you up to $200 in expenses, and we want you to start processing our fee waiver at the same time you start gathering up the documents. Because otherwise what they'll do is they can take months to process the fee waiver. And we're basically, anybody, if you're a journalist, you should be getting a fee waiver. And you're right that they don't always do that, but you can fight them on that. And that's when the RCFP and I think it's the Bergman Center at Harvard and others could probably help you with. But what we do is we do the FOIA request, and then we say, this is also a request for a fee waiver. And we say, in this paragraph, we're authorizing up to $200 in expenses. This should be sufficient for you to start gathering the records while you simultaneously process the fee waiver. Mm-hmm. So that's an important thing, especially for freelancers or small organizations like mine that we just can't afford to pay thousands of dollars. So that's an important thing. We can talk more about fee waivers if you'd like to. There's other hands up there. Yeah.
I just wanted to add really quickly, probably my social skills were so poor and I'm also very suspicious. It didn't occur to me until I had been filing FOIAs and IFRAs for 10 years that I could actually call that person up and have a nice conversation with them. And oftentimes, the question on how many spills, you could call, at least I'm thinking on the state agency, you could call that person who handles the public records and just be like, hey, I'm really curious about this and in what form you keep this database. And sometimes you'll get to understand how their data is collected or what they're doing that you might not have even known about. So instead of just getting the number of spills, you could end up with a spreadsheet that has the coordinates and what type of spill and what companies, and then you can analyze what companies are having the biggest impacts or whatever. But I think those conversations can be worthwhile sometimes.
Are they really that helpful? They will be that forthcoming and that helpful? My initial thought would be that they would only need five.
Sometimes I think that it's And because, like, I really am suspicious, and I think if they know what I'm looking for, they're going to hide it before I can get that official letter. But I think it's worth, like, feeling them out a little bit.
So you don't necessarily go at them directly, sort of kind of decide.
Yeah. I didn't know that, like, you could actually try sometimes to be nicer. Like, I have no idea.
Do you identify yourself as a journalist?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. We've got more hands up here. This lady here.
Hi, I'm Laura Arenshield. I'm a reporter for the Post-Dispatch in Ohio. And I'm curious, one of the things that we've been dealing with a lot is stonewalling and feet dragging. And I'll get like 14-day notices, like, thanks for your request. This just acknowledges that we're still working on it. And I would love to hear any strategies that anybody has for keeping things organized and tackling those types of delay tactics. I have a spreadsheet going on my laptop, but it feels very inefficient, and it's convoluted, and it's a mess. And that's the best that I've got so far.
I have one of those, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's a total disaster, though. It's chaotic. It doesn't...
Well, ours at least got the Dropbox.
It's that's helpful. Computer. Yeah, that's it.
Well, these two online tracking apps...
Both the feds and the state. But primarily, I'm facing this problem with the state. In Ohio, we've had a significant boom in fracking and drilling, and the state obviously wants it to keep going. Like, finding those records is important, I think, and we just, there's tons of records out there, but we are having a very heck of a time trying to get our hands on them, and I'm struggling to figure out how to organize my requests and where they stand, and also to, I'm interested in finding some strategies to get around those delay tactics. If anybody has any advice, I'd be
cool. What are these tracking apps called?
I'm going to pull them up right now.
One strategy, of course, always in that situation when people are holding back on information that's public information is to remind them it's public, but then to say, look, we're going to have to go with a story, and if you're not going to be able to give us the accurate input, please don't complain when the story's not accurate.
Yeah,
that will get them a lot of time.
And we've done that sometimes, but I'm hesitant to continuously write. I don't know that the public really cares that much about the sausage being made story, like whiny, the Ohio Department of Whatever.
I take issue with that. I really take issue with that. Yeah, I mean, I think that if you're writing a story and they have, and they haven't responded to a FOIA request, you should say that. And I think that when you get information through a FOIA request or a Public Records Act request, you should also put that in the story. I do think that people who are reading stories they want to see a little bit behind the wall as to how does this happen, how does news. And I think that increasingly news needs to be, people in the news industry need to be letting people who we are trying to communicate with know more about how we do what we do. And I think that one, now you will hear a lot of editors say exactly what you said. I take issue with that.
We write those stories sometimes, but if I wrote one every time the Ohio Department of Natural Resources didn't answer my request, that's all I would write.
Do you have a blog?
I do have a blog.
Okay.
I should blog about it.
You should blog about it. Seriously, it's a quick turn blog about it. Some question number three.
Not getting the information is the story.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Let me just jump in real quick. The two tracking apps, one is called iFOIA, like the Apple thing, and it hangs on the Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press site, so it's rcfp.org. And if you go to their main page, you will see a button for it. And it's somewhat worthwhile. And the other one is, it's called FOIA Online, one word. And if you Google that much, you will probably get it. But it hangs off of a site called regulations.gov.
Oh, yeah.
So the address is http blah blah, and it's secure. FOIAonline.regulations.gov. And then there's more. But so those, I think, are the two best apps. I'm not going to say they're the answer to all your problems. They can track a fairly large number of requests and give you status updates and plug into the electronic bureaucracy, and that's a good thing. One other thing to that, there's, I think, the lady behind you's comment, or maybe it was yours, data is good for FOIA. In 1996, they passed the eFOIA Act, the Electronic FOIA Act, and basically, this kind of revolutionized things because if you're asking for data, They have to give you it in electronic form. And that just blows away all this talk about copying. And basically, since they have that already, and data formats are kind of regularized now, they just have to give it to you, and there's no cost involved. That's all. I'm going to shut up. Yes, sir.
So this actually ties directly into the paper versus electronic issue. Back when the dinosaurs roamed the earth and there was no internet.
Barry Yeoman?
Yes, Barry Yeoman. I was able to go into a state agency in North Carolina and say, may I look at your file on this project?
I remember those days.
Right? And I'm wondering if there is any equivalent to that now, where you can say, look, you have a file, I'd like to page through it. I might not really need all these documents, but at least if I know what records are there, I'll know what to ask for.
Theoretically, FOIA, as written in law on the statute books, says, you know, copies of or access to X document. It says that, and like you say, I remember pouring through filing cabinets in government offices. That's just not happening so much anymore. And it's partly paranoia and partly secrecy and partly security, and I wish I could change it.
I don't think there is an equivalent. I just don't think there. It's I like a lot of people in the room have been turned a lot of paper in government offices, and I kind of miss those days. It's actually kind of faster if you have to go through 1,000 documents to do it like actually paper than doing it electronically. But I don't think there is. I mean, theoretically, it should be the same thing, but because of the way that they're now, it's all computerized and they're searching. They're not kept in those. They're not organizing the information the same way, which makes me wonder sometimes how do they know we're getting all the information we're supposed to be getting.
Right.
I don't think there is a good modern equivalent to that. Unless anybody else?
Well, electronic search is your friend too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm not
faster,
not saying we should go back.
More complete.
I would say that with state agencies, that's still sometimes an option. Like, I think you could ask, you know what? I'd like to see your file on this thing and thing. I'd like to come down and access it. These are all public documents. I'll go into a sealed room. You'll be right there, and I'll pull out what I want. And, like, I've done that with logging permits. Like, I could still go down to the Department of Natural Resources at this Washington State, and I can look at certain logging permits. They'll pull them for me. They might ask for a day. They might ask which files to pull. So I guess it's not totally equivalent. Like, which ones do you want to look at? But I think with the state agencies, I think it's much harder with feds because so often we're dealing with stuff in D.C. And like you say, then I think the paranoia really.
One thing I should mention,
well,
though.
Regional offices.
I was just going to mention, at least for EPA, which I do a lot of coverage of, there are regional offices and they have reading rooms. And so if you're FOIAing something, you may want to, depending on what it is, you may want to check with the local EPA reading room. Somebody else may have already asked what it may be there.
We've had some success with the regional EPA and with our State Department of Natural Resources going through paper files. The problem that we've come up against most recently is that they want their legal departments to review the state. They want our legal departments to files before we take a look at them. And that is a colossal logjam when you're talking about thousands and thousands and thousands of pages.
Can't fix that. Yes. There's a great scene in Aaron Brockovich. Okay, how it's done. Hey, Mark.
I'm always a fan of trying to use your relationship with whoever you're working with to try to get them to get you the documents that you're looking for and to lead you in the right direction. Sometimes it can be as simple as, hey, do you have a list of the files that are on this topic? And then when you have a list of the files, then you can ask for specific files. You may have the name of the file, whatever, to ask for. The other thing is, if you do enough requests of files to the point where you've got them trained, that they are going to respond to you. And, that happened with me with the Corps of Engineers after Katrina. And A third thing that I would suggest is you should do your own little sleuthing to see if the agency that you're covering has an FTP site where those files may already be there with the public online, you know, public access, that they may not understand that you can get in and get those files. And, you
know, does everyone know what FTP is?
Do you have any suggestions for how to sleuth those FTP sites?
Well, you gotta do it. Google's, you gotta play around with Google quite a bit to do FTP. But you do FTP colon backslash 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 and then FTP, and then as a separate word, whatever word you're looking for with the agency or part of the agency's email name or whatever, and see what pops up.
Yeah, FTP colon slash the
what is
the
main name?
Say that again.
FTP is a it's a really old internet thing. File transfer protocol. It used to be a big way of moving files around. It's a little obsolete now, but it still exists. And because it's so backwater and back office, it's not so well guarded. I think is Mark's point.
And some of the agencies like Core did away with all their FTP sites 2 years ago. I'd like to claim credit for that. But I know it wasn't. It had to do with national security. Somebody finally did a security review of some of the sites. And so some of those sites, like Homeland Security and others, will not. But EPA may have some FTP locations up for individual pieces of agencies or whatever. And some of the other agencies, like USDA, may have them up because they're ancient and don't know
your better. Is there a way to request, I'm Bruce Ritchie with FloridaEnvironments.com in Tallahassee, is there a way to request lists of files? I mean, for example, I know that the Florida Department, I know that the state in Florida has a database of documents. I don't know really quite what it is having to do with the subject. I mean, do you request a is there some lingo?
I think you need to get into a discussion with whoever's in charge of those records and say, hey, is there, you know, do you have some sort of list of those, you know, that, I mean, it's literally just that. Do you have some sort of list of your files that is, you know, a page or two pages long?
If you can get into an FTP system at all, it usually contains hierarchical directories that if you're in, you can rifle through them and look, like looking through a filing cabinet, essentially. So you need a good client or browser to get in there, but a lot of web browsers actually have an FTP add-on that works if you use the FTP prefix. This gentleman here.
Yeah, I have a question. What if you're looking for documents going back like decades?
You're out of luck.
I've looked for something like this, presidential library, and some of that stuff is online. But yeah. I mean, what do you have to basically look at everything like presidential libraries, that agency, and then maybe like the National Archives?
The National Archives is where I said
it's a problem. The internet is less good the farther back you go. 25 years or 35 years is really old for the internet. There are researchers who work with this stuff all the time. There is nothing in the world like a good research librarian, and they know all kinds of stuff. And more librarians specialize in the online part of the universe that you don't see so well through Google. But it's hard. And getting it through FOIA is hard, and those documents are less well indexed and retrievable the farther back you go in time. I don't know what time horizon you're talking about.
For example, I was looking at the Eisenhower Library. And they actually have some stuff online. I found some interesting things that they had already put into digitized files. But then looking at other eras and also other agencies, I just don't know how far. And I mean, it seems to me, I guess, that I have to basically go through the different organizations. archives, libraries, and then maybe the agencies?
Well, FOIA would help, but if it's really archived, then it's my instinct is that it's better, A, to go to the library physically and talk to the people there. Many of the documents and records are in physical form rather than electronic form, even if they are trying to get them digitized.
Right.
So, and agency libraries are often cut back budget-wise. The National Archives, is sometimes they help. There's a Miriam Nesbitt, isn't that her name? She's the FOIA ombudsman who got her position created with great effort. She's under the rubric of the National Archives, but she's really kind of an all-agency FOIA fixer, and she might be able to hook you up with people in the archives. I think one of your best strategies is to find researchers who are already working in this area, academic historians.
Some of the agencies have historian offices as well, like the Department of Defense has a historian.
Unfortunately, EPA had an office of historian that they cut, and we were just talking about this morning, Joe and I were talking about this guy at breakfast, that they really need it, so we're trying to figure out maybe if they could somehow do something different. But there's no real legacy for the environment. You know how there's a national security archive for reporters who FOIA it, and then they can deposit their files? Is there anything like that for environment?
There's the National Library for the Environment something or other, which is pretty good and kind of distant and obscure to me, but I've used them. They have all the GAO reports, a lot of them. There is something like that. I think it's more historical and a little more academic. As long as I'm still talking, let me bum you out by saying we have to end in 7 minutes.
Trying to ask a question for a while.
Okay, so who hasn't had? Sure.
Hal Burton again. Just a couple quick things. One is that I know when I've dealt with the Department of Defense, it's just something to keep in mind. Like, anytime you ask them to compile statistics to research something, they'll tell you they don't have to do that. If it's not a document that they have,
exactly,
you're asking them to analyze information and pull it together, you're out. So you need to really be aware of that. Second, a lot of the agencies will publish all the recent FOIA that they've already delivered.
Yes.
And you might take a look to see if maybe somebody asked the same thing.
Where do they do that?
They've got websites.
Every agency has a FOIA page on their website, and that's really a small universe or a big universe sometimes. It's a good place to go if you're interested in the agency. They have what is called an electronic reading room where a lot of the things that you would request anyway are already proactively published.
And just know that if you're like waiting a long time to get your story out, that maybe your documents might be posted before.
Yes.
And then third is a question. So I do have a question. I don't know. I just want to get how people have dealt with this. You've got communications that you think have happened from a company or between individuals, or maybe you just have one guy and you really want to see his email traffic. That sounds like even more of a fishing expedition. How many times, like, have you just asked for all emails either to this guy or to anyone from this domain, which is the way that the person told me to structure it, like it was a particular company? And what sort of success, and how do you view those types of...
You don't ask for it quite that way.
I don't think I've ever done it under FOIA. I've done it under the Public Records Act very successfully, but I'm not sure I've ever tried that under FOIA. Does anyone have any, if you ask for somebody's email?
I only did it once, and they said, give me the domain name of the company, which was Babcock Wilcox, and this guy. Anybody? Yeah, but it was like three.
Well, that's the beauty of searching, right? Because they can figure it out really fast.
Right. Did you have a question? This lady here?
Or
a comment?
I'm not straight, but,
I was just curious, so you have 20 days to respond, and is there another deadline that they have in terms of fulfilling? They can just take their time, like 5 years, whatever they thought.
There are literally like 10-year-old boys kicking around.
The softness of that 20-day deadline is a sore point. All they really have to do in the 20 days is say that they're working on it.
Right.
And then the clock just runs wild. So that's a sad thing. But at that point, after the 20 days, you can write them back and say, well, you blew it, so I'm not going to pay any fees. And that's boosts your morale a little bit.
Where are we? You were talking about fishing expeditions. I'm Reed Frazier. I work for the Allegheny Front radio show. Covers the environment in Pittsburgh. So we did a. On Monday, we'll be publishing this giant fishing expedition that I did with. We wanted to see the calendars of the state agency heads who deal with oil and gas. And just, it was, as you can imagine, it was a lot of documents. They charged us money, and I went to my boss, and I was like, this could be really good. And to her credit, she said, sure. So we paid. I mean, we're not going to do this a lot, but, and it took forever to, like, get the data, you know, translated onto Excel spreadsheets, and then it took a lot of reporting to like see. But we found a really high amount of contact between the agency and these oil and gas companies. And so it was like, I don't know if it was worth it, but I know.
Sounds like it to me.
I mean, it was. But I have seen with environmental groups or environmental, you know, yeah, I guess environmental groups, sometimes they do FOIAs and I worked with a group that did this for the exact same thing. We know that this guy talked to Anadarko Petroleum. What were their emails? And they shared their, you know, I just was doing a story, and he shared their what they found on their FOIA with me. So that's sort of a back, and they had to pay. So
you should have gotten a fee waiver, I think. That's me. I'm prejudiced.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you guys are telling us all about this. But the one question I had was, you know, we're a small group. We work for a public radio station with, like, zero budget for this kind of thing. What are some tools for getting a lawyer to at least to take up, like, be CC'd on an email to a state agency where you... Because that's what I've heard, is that if you just CC your lawyer, you'll get a different kind of response from the agency as far as fees go. So.
Start with the reporters committee, but there's a boatload of others out there. There's a guy named Patrick Parenteau. Who's here. He just wishes that he could find a FOIA suit to do pro bono. But there's lots of others. We got about 20 seconds left here.
But we're done.
Liza Gross, freelance. I think I forgot to say who I was before. But are there guidelines for what's a legitimate privacy issue when you get a document back that's redacted? And how do you know how to...
It's a swamp.
It's a mess. It's no. The answer is no.
Okay.
I mean, you know, and I like Tony's thing with the Jaguar. I mean, I didn't understand this. These are like state government agents who, you know, they captured a Jaguar illegally, and they don't want to tell us their names because it would, it would embarrass them, right? Yeah, they were subject to harassment.
Yes.
Well, because they should be.
They should be.
You know.
So it's worth kicking and screaming about.
Yeah, it is. It definitely. Those privacy issues are getting. That's a lot of what we're seeing, and it's, you know. It's bullshit.
Okay, we're done. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
You can hang out and talk.
Yeah.
I'm gonna see if they want to post this.